apologize for being late. My name is Diane. I'm a compulsive overeater, anorexic, bulimic. It's so funny. I do, is someone hiding?
I'll give you a warning.
Okay. How much of a warning?
I'll give you a 5-minute warning.
Thank you. Okay. Because I'm a control freak.
we all.
So I have been in program, a retread, but I've been in program now 17 years as of January 1st. I celebrated 17 years of not throwing up no matter what. That is my bottom line abstinence. That is something that I have done perfectly for 17 years. The rest is progress. But I've shown up. It's about, this is the one thing I've done consistently for 17 years, and I've done, there's nothing consistently. I'm an undisciplined person. Clearly, you can, you know, the great thing about in-person meetings, you can't, like, hide behind Zoom. I'm out here. I'm late. It is, I am late all, I have this last probably 6 months. I write on a 10th step when I'm late and when I'm not. And it is amazing to me how powerless I am over being late. You know, you want to find out why you do something that is a character, defective character. Try to stop doing it. Mm-hmm. Try to think if you have power over it. Because, you know, this morning God just keeps, I'm supposed to do 1 minute. This is what I've learned in program. It's attainable action. Self, you do small esteem building steps, and it adds up over the years. And when we don't, you know, I now, being late here, being powerless over them shutting down traffic on cold water, but it's still me. I still know, like, if I had left on time, I'd be here. I also no longer, I do a 2-minute meditation during the day and 1 minute of exercise. Could never sponsor someone who is an exercise bulimic because I don't have any experience, strength, and hope, because at the end, at 11 o'clock at night, when I've done no arm lifts or, like, I mean, 1 minute, it's still hard for me. And 2 minutes of meditation is still hard for me to, like, sit and breathe in and breathe out without having anything else come into my head. And I was thinking, coming over here, I was going to meditate when I got here. Well, that's out the door. And, you know, I didn't do my exercise this morning. Well, I'm done, so thank you, God. I'm done for, like, a week, because I'm not going to be able to move my leg. And God just keeps, like, giving me, dropping little pebbles, dropping, and I make amends. Apologize if I, you know, I'm a secretary and a speaker-getter for a Sunday meeting. Like, it's stressful to me. It's stressful to everyone who doesn't have, you know, who's sitting here waiting for a speaker. And, you know, before program, before, you know, and this didn't, today, I can recognize, like, my part in this. You know, and it's not only affects me, it affects everyone else. And I get to make amends, you know, to the group. I get to make amends on my 10th step. And I get to, you know that I have a little bit of money in the bank as far as that my trespasses on a daily basis are hopefully not going to get me in the food. Mm-hmm. But that is always waiting for me. You know, the food just comes in from every which way. It wants me dead on a daily basis. And I know, I really know that in my heart. Like, I don't know what I thought. I have wacko thoughts, like, that somehow when I came in here, 17 years later, food wasn't going to be a problem. I am not one of those people. Like, I am always going to be a compulsive overeater. I am never going to be recovered. I know that. That's just my experience. I know that if there is a food, and the thing for me, I'll go back and I'll, is that I can eat something on one day and not eat something on the other. I can eat something in the morning that I can't eat at night. I cannot eat something in the, you know, it changes, it morphs. And, you know, I can go in and have a handful or a serving of something and say, I am not going to have that again. I'm not going to walk back into from my office to my kitchen. And that's a lie that my disease tells me, because that is not the truth, because I am powerless. And I do a lot of things for program, a lot more than I do today than I did when I walked in. And I still, like, I want more. I want to be on time. I want to be a better person. And, you know, I am a human being, and that is my basic problem in life, is I don't really want to be a human being. Mm-hmm. I want to be, I mean, you know, I used to not be able to say this. I want to be perfect. I want you, everyone, to love me, but I don't want to have to love everyone else. I want everybody to cater and read my mind and make me feel comfortable and tell me how fantastic I am. And I really do. Like, and I want what everyone else has, because I think it's better. Because I think that you have something more than I have. And, you know, growing up, and I'll go back, I grew up in New York. I was one of middle child of three girls. My dad was an alcoholic. My mom was a compulsive overeater and an Al-Anon. And it was an incredibly chaotic household, incredibly unsafe. My parents live in New York, but they're out here for 2 months out of the year, and I just spent a day with them 2 days ago, and I realized, like, it's not their fault, but I realized, like, why I am, like, I modeled behavior that was not conducive to a happy and serene life, and they still are in that whatever place they are of, like, just arguing. And that's how I used to be. I grew up in a house that we fought all the time. There was physical abuse, mental abuse. I was told things as a kid that, like, I will pick you up as from school at 3 o'clock. And I'd be sitting there. And I was an anxious kid and a sensitive kid. And I was told that I was a very sensitive kid, so there was something wrong with that. And I couldn't manage my emotions very well, so, like, I was perfect. My sister and I, my older sister, when I was 5, she has more of a memory of it. I have the memory. And she's 18 months older. We went to visit my grandparents in California. We got off the plane, and, you know, we're talking about the 1970s, and my parents, and this is not lost on me, were late. And there was no cell phones. And my sister was really upset, and she had walked out, like, with toys in a bag, and it, you know, after 5 hours on the flight, it fell at LaGuardia Airport. Mm-hmm. And my parents walked in probably about an hour late, I don't know, because they called when we got off, and they hadn't left, and they live in what, about 45 minutes away. And they got to the airport, and they yelled at us, you're so sensitive. You're so, you know. Well, you know what? It was scary to get off a plane when you're 5 and you're 7 and to be left. And, like, that's gaslighting. Mm-hmm. Not taking responsibility as parents, gaslighting. I have 4 kids, do it really imperfectly, and they're grown. But, like, what you say, you know, your actions have to match your words. Mm-hmm. And that was my issue and program, is my actions, what I thought in my head, my actions didn't match. I wake up every morning, I'm not going to eat this. Well, that didn't happen. I'm going to do this, this, and this. Well, that didn't happen. And that's the environment I grew up in. And the solution to the fear I had, the emotions that I felt, was food. It worked. I mean, and I won't go into, but, like, my life revolved around food. I just was, and we didn't have it. It's not that we didn't have it. My mom was a compulsive overeater, so we really didn't have food in the house because she couldn't control herself. So I would go to other people's houses and see what they had, which whatever they had was more than what I felt that I wanted. They had the foods. You know, my parents were forward, sort of in a backwards way of like healthy food, granola, you know, yucky granola, not like the boxed granola that I ate tons and tons of. I was hungry, and I found a way to get food, and it comforted that feeling of just not feeling loved and not feeling safe, and in fear a lot of the time. And at 13, I started throwing up. I learned I couldn't stand my body. I wanted to be like Kate Moss, boy body. I developed early. It's not a women's meeting, but I was uncomfortable, and I wanted to be small. And when I was in, I guess it was fifth grade, I had a concussion, and I lost weight. And I remember that my parents had people over, and they said to me, you know, you look good. You look good. And I took that as I didn't look good before. And we're not talking about a lot of weight. I mean, I look back at that time to try and have the right eyes. I wasn't really heavy. I was just not thin anymore. I was developing. And, you know, we have to be really careful because you look good. You know, I don't say those things to people. I don't say, you know, if someone loses weight, gains weight, I don't even really notice. But, like, words affect me. And I, you know, was perfect. I was a perfect storm of a person to take that in and go, okay, now I got to figure out a way to do this because I have no control over the amount that I do on a daily basis. So I proceeded for the next 10 years to consume tens of thousands of calories every day and throw up. And my life stopped socially. It was arrested. You know, the first time I walked into a meeting, I couldn't say my name. I was just socially stunted. I stopped. I didn't know how to talk to people. I didn't know how to relate to people. The world just scared me, and I could go behind closed doors, and that's what I did. And that was food was my friend. It was my boyfriend that I never had. It was just everything. And I hated myself. I just stopped. Like, my life stopped. But on the outside, it didn't look like it stopped because I can fake it pretty well. That's the one thing my parents, not the one thing, I love my parents very much. I just am not far, just spent, you know, it's only 12 hours I haven't seen them, so they're right in my head. But, you know, they walk into my house and it's just about how you look, I have to go to a funeral after, which is why I'm dressed up like this, but you know, looks were very important. That if you, you know, it's not, my mom would say, it's not how you feel, it's how you look. Mm-hmm. And I took that to heart. Mm-hmm. So I can look the part, I can fake it. But what happened is that eventually, the walls come, you know, it's a progressive disease, and the walls come crumbling down. And, after the, you know, 10 years of binging and purging, I came to program. And I stopped. I was here for probably 5 minutes. I got a sponsor for probably 30 seconds. And I stopped throwing up. And that was enough. And I left. I was like, okay, I wanted to get married. I wanted to have kids. What I thought was in the, you know, was stopping me was throwing up. So I stopped. I had no program. I was a dry drunk, and I got married, and I had 4 kids because married was the solution, kids were the solution, a job was, you know, I thought that was the solution. And on the outside, my life really looked good. On the inside, I was like, I just felt like everyone had a book of how to live, and I thought that everyone was more comfortable than I was. Which is probably true. I was incredibly uncomfortable. But I didn't want the solution that I knew. I didn't want to do work. I didn't want to work. Like, I am, un, like, I want things to be like dropped in my lap. Mm-hmm. I do. Like I want, I don't know, I have kids that fell far from the apple fell far from the tree. And they work for what they have. And I just wanted it like their birthday, God, please just give me money and, you know, give me what this person has. And that was like the majority of the world had everything that I wanted. So I had to hate you. I hated me, and I definitely hated you for having anything that I wanted, whether it was like straighter hair, curlier hair, more money, less money. Like, it doesn't matter. If I want something and I get it, I don't want it anymore. Mm-hmm. Like it's, and then if I don't have something I want it, that's just my, it's like addict thinking, because nothing on the outside was going to fill that hole on the inside. And it was so big and it was so deep. And I spent a lot of time as a kid like in tears. And then suddenly, I think when I started the eating disorder, like my emotions, I just didn't feel anymore. I could like, I can handle a lot of stuff without crying. And that was like my badge of honor. Like, I don't cry. I'm not vulnerable. I can, you know, I can put my best friend in a body bag because her mother can't. And I'm tough and strong. And then, like, I just shove it down. And the thing is, it comes up. Mm-hmm. It comes out sideways. this is what this program has taught me, to walk through life imperfectly. But I do it with the help of others. I do it with a sponsor. When I first walked into here, I came back 17 years ago. I came back because I was on the floor crawling. I did not want to be here. I had a drug addiction. I went another way after my fourth kid and wound up in a treatment center detox. And the person said to me, so smart, you're not eating, like you don't, that's when my anorexia started. When the bulimia stopped, I couldn't gain weight. I'm too scared because I have, like, that's bad. You know, everything's bad. I have this is bad and this is bad. And you know, you're addicts. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, my thinking was just whacked out. Well, if I stop the drugs, I'm just not going to eat. And this person, and it was a young girl in detox, said, you have a problem. And I know that. I knew that. I have a problem with food. And I used it to control. And when I came out of there, I went to NA meetings for a while, and then I wound up back at OA and started my journey. And my life is incredibly different. And I have all those things on the outside that I thought would make me happy. I really do. Like, I remember someone saying in program, you know, my life is phenomenal. And I used to sit there going, that's not possible. Mm-hmm. Like, I am in so much pain. I am never going to, like, say, first of all, I'm never going to be up here and talk to people. Like, I can't open my mouth. I can't say, you know, things that happened to me It was, my first to anything is no. Like, will you share at a meeting? I used to say no. Then I used to, you know, ruminate about it for months or days. And then I used to have to try and get out of it that morning. And then my poor sponsor, and I've had two in program, and I am so grateful to both of them, you show up. And that is what I've learned to do. And I've learned to take responsibility for myself. I have a God who has never dropped me. I think I dropped myself, but God has never dropped me. I mean, and I really thought like I was God. Like, I knew what was right for you and my husband and my kids. And, you know, then they got older and was a bad idea. That doesn't work. And I had to delve big more into the program of what were the causes and conditions of why I ate. I had to uncover it, and I did. I've been through the steps the second time around. I'm on step seven, and I went through the OA 12 and 12 and answered every one of those questions in step four. The first time I did 170. And, you know, I had to accept who I am. You know, I am never going to be perfect, although I want to be. I'm never going to be perfect. Neither are my kids. Neither is my husband. Neither is anybody. And I have to accept. Acceptance is the key to everything. And when I know that I have a power greater than myself that I choose to call God, and I see it in my sponsees, and that I can let go of a lot of things. I don't do it perfectly, but I know like God has a plan. And I know that there's nothing on the outside that is going to make me feel good on the inside. It's going to be about step work is the secret sauce of this program. If you're not working the steps, this is my personal opinion, you're not going to get better. I mean, that's been my experience, to do them consistently, which I do. I do step work 3 times a week, which is, if someone had said when I came in, like, a person said, call me at 8:30, I think someone did, was like, call me at 8:30 and tell me what you're going to eat for the day, and I was like, no way. And God has always been there. Like, I want someone, please someone, you know, come and ask to be my sponsor, because I didn't want to have to go and ask anybody. That was frightening. So someone did, and then they told me to call them. So God was always there. I can connect the dots backwards. It's just moving forwards. And what I realized in meditation is that I'm living in the past or the future, and I'm and that's what the meditation, which I've finally brought into my program, is to stay in today, and to, like, you know, not like I can get back present at any time, and forgive myself and forgive, you know, when I was in disease, I thought I was a better person than I actually was. Like, I was in such denial that I thought I was phenomenal and great and kind. And as long as I was doing stuff for you, and then there was this, like, there's this message that I thought that you didn't know about, that I was doing stuff for you so I, you know, could turn around and gaslight you. Because that's what I was taught. Like, I do something for you. You don't have to do anything for me, except when I want something for you. And then the rules change. And that's all unconscious that I've had to bring to realize, like, I have to relearn life. I mean, I've had to relearn life, because if I don't, I go back to the food. And that's where a sponsor, fellows, meetings, I do it all. I really do. And I can't even believe I'm saying this. And if you're out there and you know, are resentful of me, I understand. Like, I used to be like, screw you. That can't be possible. I don't feel perfect all the time, but I know that I have tools. I've got, and I wanted to read today, to get me through anything. And I have fellows to get me through anything. And I turn to it today. Not perfectly, but I have it in place. And I've walked through death. I walked, my husband and I were separated through a pandemic, and, you know, I worked my, and so did he, to get to a place where our marriage is better than it ever was. We just celebrated 33 years of marriage. And it was rock, you know, should have never gotten, you know, that was my solution, is getting married at, you know, 23. Mm-hmm. Like, I run things by people for the most part. And when I don't, you know, God just drops and says, you know, next time didn't quite work out the way you thought it was going to be. And that's okay. You know, I can make mistakes more comfortably today. Thank you. And I just want to end with today's reading, because it says really more than I could ever. Coming to believe was something that happened as we began taking actions which others told we had worked for them. Whether or not we believed these actions would work didn't seem to matter. Once we took the action and saw it worked, we began to believe it from the 12 steps of 12 traditions of Oreo Juice Anonymous, page 16 and 17. This is one of the secrets of the OA program. We cannot think ourselves into good action, but we can act ourselves into good thinking. Mm-hmm. Willingness to follow the suggestions of the program leads us to healing the wreckage of our lives and the ravages of the disease. I experienced the miracle of abstinence because I asked someone to sponsor me. I designed a practical, nourishing food plan, and I committed daily to following my plan and calling my sponsor. I experienced the healing bonds of fellowship because I attended meetings regularly and became involved in service. I experienced the spiritual awakening because I put all my doubts and fears aside and placed my reliance on a higher power of my own understanding instead of my distorted self-will. Thank you so much for asking me. This is the time for questions only. There's no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the reader, of the leaders, are my own and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. Please remember, if you ask a question, your voice may be audible on the OA podcast. Please resume. Okay.
Thank you. You mentioned getting a handful of something, going back to your office, and wanting to go back. What do you do today to not go back?
It's hard. I'm so sorry. She asked when I talked about going to the cupboard and taking a handful and then going back and then. What do I do to stop? There are certain foods that I do not eat. I gave up sugar 18 months ago, which is a miracle and had nothing to do with me because I have a overgrowth of yeast and ate sugar for years and years and years, knowing that that was going to every doctor that would tell me something different. But so there are certain, but you know, knowing what the solution was. Which makes sense. So there's certain foods that I absolutely don't eat. They are not, if I eat them, I don't break my abstinence, but I don't eat them. And God gave me, I have their effects if I do. But as far as I have to sit, I know that if I go back a second time, then the third time is there. And sometimes I do, sometimes I do. Like sometimes I'll say, and I remind myself, I am a compulsive overeater. So one is too many and 1,000 is not enough. So I really can't start, I have to be in a emotional, spiritual, and physically a good place to play that pantry game or the refrigerator game. And you kind of know it before. So I have a great respect for my disease, and I don't, when that happens, I have a stopping point for today. And I think I have enough in place to stop. But I also know that I don't know, disease is way more powerful than I am. So if there's something, there are certain foods that I know that I can't stop, and I stay away from them. So I guess abstinence is really the solution, and to not get in the ring with my disease.
Thank you very much. Can you tell me, it sounded like you went through a process of getting gentler with yourself. Maybe you can tell me a little bit about how do you remind yourself to be gentle and loving with yourself, to your to your point around you could complain about how you're late and other, but how do you let that go?
The question was have I gotten gentler with myself, and how have I not been that self-critical, to let go of that self-critical that, keeps me in disease and out of the world. I think that's what you asked. I have the most gentle sponsor now. I had one sponsor that I needed in the beginning for the first 11 years. It was wonderful, but it was kind of a little parental, but in a good way. I needed that. So today I have someone, and it's been she's been my sponsor for 3 years, who, first of all, I believe God's in charge of everything. Are you okay? If God's in charge, then me being late this morning was, I have something to learn. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do that. That's a shitty feeling. Mm-hmm. It's not a good feeling. So I get to work. But I also have a sponsor, and it really helps for me to have a person who is not critical of me. and who has been not critical of me consistently. Like, and I needed that at this point because I had critical parents. I have critical people around me. That's what I'm used to. And I have a sponsor who is, you know, so, you're compulsive, so. And so I have learned to not lie and to not have that. I'm always looking for like that slack of, you know, you did that wrong. And as she hasn't done that to me, I've done it a lot less to myself. I do it a lot less to other people. And it's just, I am now mindful of it. Like, I think God's in charge. I mean, everything that happens, the good and the bad, I can't just have the good, you know. Things fall in my, you know, stock market goes up, God, thank you, you know, you're there. Well, when it goes down, God's there too, you know, saying, for whatever reason. So it's really that I am powerless over everything, and everything happens for a reason, and that takes sort of a, what can I learn from it out of every situation, comfortable and uncomfortable that I'm in. And I really can say that, like, I believe that today. Otherwise, like, I would have been late and I wouldn't, you know, honestly, I would have just left, called you, sorry, you know, my dog died. That's my solution. And then I'm in the food. So God's in charge, and it takes a lot of that, and a great sponsor who I don't have to lie to, because I lie to myself. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. You just spoke about powerlessness. I wonder, was it, when you came into the program, was it easy to take step one, or was there a process for you to admit powerlessness over the food?
I have to do it every single day. And I really do. Like, I think, like, I wake up an addict every, you know, No, the answer is it's hard. It was hard. And every time that I think that I have power over food or people or places or things, God's right there going, mm-mm, you don't. No. I want to have power. I want to be a normal eater. I live with a foodie. And, you know, every once in a while, I'm like, and he doesn't understand. I mean, he's been to meetings with me, and it'll be like, just have a bite. We were at a party, and, you know, which is a miracle in and of itself, because I would just not even do that, because that's frightening. And, you know, these desserts came, and I was like, huh. And I remember around people who are eating them, and my husband's like, it's so good, just have a bite. And I'm like, you know, if I have a bite, the evening's not going to go the way that you want it to be. Whatever you're thinking is going to happen is not going to happen, you know. But, like, I want to be a normal. Like, I want to just, and I did that for a long time, and it left me consuming tens of thousands of calories, wanting it to be different. Yeah. So I really know, I mean, I know I'm powerless, but, you know, I don't want to be. I want to be a normal eater. Then I'm not, and I will never be a normal eater, ever. Like, I am not where it can, like, just not be mindful of a handful of this. I mean, I'm pretty much okay. There's certain foods I can, but I love to have power over food. I would love, and I'm not normal. And I think that is the acceptance. It's like, I'm not. And stop, Diane, thinking that you are, because that is where I get into trouble.
How did you figure out your abstinence, or develop a program of abstinence, especially as it pertains to living with other people, other humans?
Yeah. Those are a problem. But you know what? Yes, how do I deal with food with other people in the house? How do I deal with my abstinence? what is my absence is, I mean, my bottom line absence is no throwing up no matter what. You know, when I started this program, I would, just as far as food goes, my sponsor, when I finally let her in, was like, well, what do you eat for breakfast? Well, I don't eat breakfast. I eat a frozen yogurt at lunch when I leave my office with toppings on it galore. And then I have licorice that I have sitting on my desk, one of those big things. Mm-hmm. And then whatever, you know, dinners, whatever. She's like, well, have breakfast. And I was like, I can't have breakfast. Like, if I start the morning with breakfast, I'll binge. Like, that's what I thought. Mm-hmm. I had to relearn how to, the foods that I could eat and couldn't eat. And I also have, an allergy to some foods. Not that that really matters, because... You know, I eat sugar and I get a rash all over my body, and it affects me. Like, I don't want that now, but I had that for years. Like, I didn't give a shit. Mm-hmm. Like, food was more important than any consequence mm-hmm. of food. So, my abstinence has changed, and it has. I had food in the house for my kids, because I didn't have food and I didn't want them to feel restricted. So I had to get, when I had my kids get to that age, I wanted to do everything I could for them not to have an eating disorder. Mm-hmm. So I had to clean up I had to make their food, not my food. And the times that it became, lines were crossed, Halloween, you know, I had to, Christmas, Hanukkah, whatever. I had to get close to the sponsor to figure out what foods worked for me, and it changed. But I know my bottom line abstinence foods that causes the phenomenon of the craving. And for the most part, I no longer will go in the ring with them, because I am going to lose every time. So people have other food that's not mine. I have my own food, and I eat pretty consistently. And I report my food every single night of what I eat, and I'm honest about it. Well, you know what? That is not true. I report when I eat now. For years, I reported everything that I ate, and then I lied about it, you know, which I realized that wasn't working anymore. But I report when I eat something that is going to leave me uncomfortable at the end of the day. I ate this, so I tell on myself. And that, being honest about your food, takes away that. It's been my experience, and that's the hardest thing to do, because I got to be honest with myself. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. It's time. Oh, okay.
Thank you very much. So much what you said. Are there certain prayers that you gravitate to, that you find yourself saying more often than others, or certain ones that sort of speak to you in general?
I go to a lot of meetings, so I say prayers at meetings. I am a very undisciplined person, so getting up in the morning and, it was very impressive with this reading this morning, but it's because I was trying to get grounded and find some way. Mm. But if I tell myself I have to do something, that's why the 2-minute meditation and 1 minute of exercise, because even at 11 o'clock at night, I can do that. I can do that. That's attainable. That's about all that. So I go to a lot of meetings which have prayers. The Serenity Prayer works for me all the time. My prayer is I take God with me. Even running, you know, from Encino, where my car is parked. I was like, come on, God, you know, just be with me, God. That's my prayer, is that God is with me, and I just have to remember that, and that I am really not alone. I'm as alone as I want to be, and I've spent a lot of years alone in my head, by myself, lonely, surrounded by people. That's why I had kids, to not feel alone, and you still feel alone. Mm-hmm. There's nothing worse than being in a room of people and feeling lonely, and that is how I felt my whole life. And God, which is my prayer, please, God, come with me to the meeting, come with me to the funeral, come with me, and so I'm never alone. And you know, the Serenity Prayer, I would say, is truly what I live by, because my whole life I just wanted to control, and there's certain things I can and certain things I can't, and I need to know the difference, because when I start wanting to control something and making, you know, which is it all the time. I need to turn back to God, and that's my prayer.
How do you interact with your family? You mentioned that your parents had a certain amount of dysfunctionality, and how do you interact with them now?
It's how do I interact with my family and my parents? And they're the toughest. My parents, you know, I've worked through my kids, my husband. My parents are the toughest. And I've gone outside of program because I have tried everything and I want to be kind. My parents are, you know, 83 and 84. And I want to be kind. And, you know, I wasn't kind. I mean, I'm angry. I'm really angry. And I, you know, not, I mean, not, I am, you know, the things come up and I don't want to be that way. So, I apologize. I've sought outside help, you know, between, therapy, you know, talk therapy, EMDR. I'll do anything to be kind because that's how I want to be a kind person, and live through life and not leave a lot of wreckage. And when I do, I apologize. So the other night, as uncomfortable as it was, and I said to my mom, stop being so mean. She can't. I can't. How is she gonna? She doesn't even have a program. She has nothing. So outside help and a lot of writing, and it's imperfect, and that's okay. And I do the best that I can. I show up and I try and be the best daughter that I can possibly be. So when they leave this earth, and my sister left this earth 3 years ago, and I'm not speaking to her, and I never want that to happen. So I will go to the ends of the earth to try imperfectly to be a better person. Because it's me. If there's discord with anybody, I have to, even if I have a 0.5%, I have to look at mine. And I'm not 12 anymore. I'm, you know, I'm 58. It's time. I got to grow up. I got to grow up. So there's more peace. It's not perfect, but there's more peace. Okay.